hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the day after. It's the 19th day of April 2019, the day so many liberal dreams died, but they're still thrashing around in there. They will not let them die. They will not take them off life support. It's rather hilarious. By the way, I am Derek Hunter. Welcome to the program. As always, you can email the show, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. You can enter to win a signed book, if you so choose, by Arthur Brooks. We'll be doing that drawing probably next week. I'll be more definitive about that coming up Monday. I'll have my mind made up by Monday. So much to get to. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. And this is a show you're going to want to share with a friend. And you might even want to share it with an enemy. It's one of those days. Oh, yes, that giant sucking sound was all the air being let out of the liberal bubble. But they started blowing. They started blowing that sucker back up. They are not going to let the facts stand in the way of a good story. In a way, it's admirable. It shows their dedication to their ideology, if not their chosen profession or the truth. But it is something to behold, and we have a ton of audio, and then the last 15 minutes of the program is going to be an interview with one of the foremost election law experts in Hans von Spakovsky from the Heritage Foundation. He can lay it bare. He actually will have, I talked to him yesterday at about 3-4 o'clock, somewhere in there. He'd read the report by then, but we have some audio that is really ridiculous, along with some times. Apparently, CNN employs the fastest readers on the face of the earth, neither of whom are lawyers, I don't believe, these reporters, but damn it, they got through the entire almost 500 pages of the Mueller report in about 15 minutes. They're gifted over there at CNN, or I guess more accurately, they're special. Is that rude to say? Who cares? It's accurate. All right, so let's start with it. Let's get right to the Attorney General basically driving a dagger through the heart of the last 2 years' worth of lies in the liberal media.
Finally, the special counsel investigated a number of links or contacts between the Trump campaign officials and individuals connected with the Russian government during the 2016 presidential campaign. After reviewing these contacts, the special counsel did not find any conspiracy to violate U.S. law involving Russian-linked persons and any persons associated with the Trump campaign. So that's the bottom line. After nearly 2 years of investigation, thousands of subpoenas, hundreds of warrants and witness interviews, the special counsel confirmed that the Russian government sponsored efforts to illegally interfere with the 2016 presidential election, but did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts.
No collusion whatsoever. That was the whole reason for this entire investigation. There's collusion. There's collusion. The Trump, we've been told for 2 solid years, more than 2 years, really, before the Mueller investigation launched, we were assured by our noble betters with media credentials that the President of the United States, his children, his campaign officials, people tangentially associated with him, they were all coordinating with Russia and with WikiLeaks, the release of emails and who knows, maybe even the acquisition of those emails. It doesn't matter. We knew that they were guilty of something. They had to be. After all, Donald Trump had beaten Hillary Clinton for the presidency. That isn't allowed to happen. That doesn't happen at all. The left swore up and down this was true, not just Democrats in elected office, but Democrats in newsrooms across the country. So finding out that there is no tooth fairy hit them pretty damn hard, to the point that they pretended as though the last 2 years of them didn't exist. I am not exaggerating. This clip happened on MSNBC yesterday.
It sounded like a spokesman, not an attorney general. And the word collusion, I mean, a lawyer doesn't use that term because there is no crime of collusion. Only Trump uses that term. And so you have the attorney general parroting that.
That was Neil Katyal, I believe it's pronounced K-A-T-Y-A-L. He says in his Twitter bio that he is a Supreme Court lawyer and law professor, also an extreme centrist, former acting Solicitor General of the United States, MSNBC contributor. He's put out a lot of big credentials there, and he says nobody says collusion at all. That's ridiculous. He told this to Brian Williams, who has his own ethical problems, is why he's relocated to the MSNBC's sent down to like double A ball after being the anchor of the NBC nightly newscast. Brian Williams, being a parrot, not being a particularly bright man, then a little bit later repeated the same thing with another guest, a writer for Slate, I think it was, who then reiterated, nobody uses collusion. I don't even know why he's saying that.
And you and others have pointed out this word collusion is not a term in the law.
It's not a term in the law, but it's clear that as the attorney general, Bill Barr knows how to speak the president's language and is speaking perhaps to an audience larger than an audience of one. But this certainly resonates with the president. It's very difficult to see an attorney general doing this.
Suddenly, everybody's a lawyer on MSNBC. Brian Williams, nobody says collusion. There's no collusion is not against the law. The last 2+ years, we have been told the president is guilty of collusion. He must be impeached over collusion. I have 2 montages here that are about a minute long each that are hilarious in their own ways. I'm going to start with Auntie Maxine Waters. Most of what you're about to hear was said on MSNBC. She, of course, is not going to let the facts stand in the way of her narrative either. But it's interesting to note that after the idea of Trump-Russia collusion was completely decimated by the Mueller report yesterday, and then you heard the reporters and the journalists and the lawyers that they bring on, their experts, the employed legal experts of these networks saying, nobody said collusion. Where's collusion coming from? That's not against the law. It's important to remember the last 2 years. We'll start with just Auntie Maxine. Remember, this is just one person. We could have picked anybody. This was compiled by David Rutz over at the Washington Free Beacon, the genius over there. Listen to it.
Here you have a president who I can tell you and guarantee you is in collusion with the Russians.
I say that he was in collusion with Putin.
I believe that there really has been collusion.
I say that he was in collusion with the Kremlin.
I am so depending on our special counsel, Robert Mueller, to connect the dots, to connect those dots. Connect the dots. Dot. 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 Dot.
The dots are connected.
The dots are getting closer.
If there was collusion,
we'll get to collusion.
I have my hopes for Mueller, as most people do.
I think it's going to be proven
that if Mueller does his job,
I believe there was collusion,
and collusion will lead to impeachment. It's going to lead right to impeachment.
That he ought to be impeached.
So I believe it is possible to impeach him.
That we need to impeach him.
How long is it going to take? I don't know, but I give it to about December.
We've got to get the facts. We've got to do the investigation. That is what leads to impeachment. I think it will lead to the impeachment of this president.
We've got him.
We've got him. Of course, you don't got him. You don't have him. The person in whom you put all of your faith, Robert Mueller, investigated this 2 years, $25 million, hundreds, thousands of subpoenas, millions of pages of documents, and no proof of collusion. None whatsoever. That's not going to stop Maxine Waters. Look, she's a partisan Democrat. She is as safe as the day is long. Her family, including her husband, have gotten incredibly rich off of industries that she oversees in her capacity as a congresswoman, and she has skated on those charges for years. A little bit more lying to the public isn't going to change anything about her political fate. The people of her district are going to vote for her no matter what. Oddly enough, she can't vote for herself since she lives in a rich neighborhood in a different district, but that doesn't matter to the people of South Central Los Angeles. Maxine Waters has their back. Imagine if this is Maxine Waters having their back, their hellhole that is their district. Imagine how bad it would be if she had their front. But it wasn't just Auntie Maxine going off about collusion, Brian Williams and MSNBC. Something called, it's a group of artists. I can't remember their name off the top of my head, but they're absolutely brilliant. They put together a compilation, a song, actually, of a lot of the times. It's not even close to all of the times because it would be 5 hours long. Of all the times that the people, the pundits, the politicians on MSNBC and CNN talked about collusion, and they set it to a nice beat. It has a good beat. You can dance to it. Here it is.
Sort of collusion.
Trump, Russian, possible collusion.
Trump, Russian, metal
collusion.
Trump, Russia, possible collusion.
Trump, Russian, potentially collusion.
Trump, Russia, possible collusion.
Trump, Russian, possible collusion.
Trump, Russian, bot collusion.
Trump, Russian collusion.
Trump, Russia, possible collusion.
Trump, Russian, possible collusion.
Russian collusion.
Trump, Russian, possible collusion.
Trump, Russian, possible collusion.
Trump, Russians, collusion.
Collusion with the Russians.
Trump, Russia, possible collusion.
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 Trump, Russia, potential collusion.
Trump, Russia, potential collusion.
Putin and the Kremlin and be in collusion with Putin and the Kremlin and be in collusion.
And Putin and the Kremlin and be in collusion.
17 agencies.
17 of our intelligence agencies have confirmed.
17 of them. But remember what MSNBC allowed to be broadcast unquestioned and unchallenged on their airwaves yesterday.
It sounded like a spokesman, not an attorney general. And the word collusion, I mean, a lawyer doesn't use that term because there is no crime of collusion. Only Trump uses that term. And so you have the attorney general parroting that.
Only Trump uses that term. Only that meanie Trump. Nobody else ever uses that term. That's MSNBC in a nutshell. That's actually all of the media in a nutshell. They were not going to let the facts stand in the way of their narrative. Over at CNN, my friend Mary Catherine Hamm was on. I suspect she'll be in exile for a while over at CNN for saying this, but she called out the media on the ignoring of collusion, the ignoring of the finding of Robert Mueller and his team of investigators finding zero collusion. They pretended that it didn't happen. They pretended that they never said there was collusion. They don't even know where the word comes from. Who's saying such a crazy thing? And many of the journalists were pretending that actually Mueller did find collusion. It was unbelievable yesterday. I could literally just play nothing but clips from the media for an hour, and you would never be able to stop laughing and vomiting that this is what journalism has become. Let's listen to Mary Catherine Hamm, seemingly, I would suspect, exile herself at CNN.
I hope nobody missed leg day because carrying these goalposts are going to be very heavy. You want to do it for the next 18 months. Because the idea coalescing that the idea of collusion, which everyone we all know used for 2 years as a shorthand for a conspiracy in a large criminal sense, the idea that we did not use that for that, and that conclusion does not matter, and that therefore it's like somehow improper to point out that there was no collusion as we meant it for the last 2 years, I think is an operation in gaslighting. There was no collusion. It is good news. It's great news he wasn't a foreign asset, and that he is the duly elected president.
Mary Catherine is absolutely right. We were promised punch and pie. We were promised that there was collusion. We were sworn that there was, I mean, Adam Schiff said there is ample evidence of collusion. Eric Swalwell, ample evidence of collusion. They were preparing articles of impeachment because the president of the United States was a tool of a foreign government. They're still actually preparing articles of impeachment. That's why they want his tax returns. They need to find out whether or not the president of the United States is a tool of a foreign government. Well, $25 million later, 2 years later, we know that he wasn't, that that was not just wrong, but a lie. I mean, these are the people who are supposed to fact check things. These are the people who are supposed to get the story straight. There are editors in place. Yes, you know, reporters can go off the rails and assume conclusions not in evidence. The role of an editor is to say, hey, wait a second, you don't actually back up this claim. So we're going to have to remove this. But instead of removing things they couldn't back up, they removed the editor. And that's what cable news is. That's what print is now. Here's a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to fling a bunch of poo at the wall, and we're going to see what sticks. It is sad and pathetic, and they got their comeuppance yesterday, but they were not. Actually, before we move on to more media reaction, there was one moment in the Bob Barr press conference that was absolutely hilarious. A reporter for CBS News asked a question that the media has been talking about since the press conference was announced. Why are you doing this press conference? What is going on? Are you just running blocker for the president? Is that what's happening here? The Attorney General's response to the Attorney General's response to this question is absolutely, positively one of my favorite moments from yesterday. The reporter is Paula Reed over at CBS, and the Attorney General, of course, is William Barr. Listen to this exchange.
Mr. Attorney General, let's start with Democrats who have questioned some of the process here. A Republican-appointed judge on Tuesday said you have, quote, created an environment that has caused a significant part of the American public to be concerned about these redactions. You cleared the president on obstruction. The president is fundraising off of your comments about spying. And here you have remarks that are quite generous to the president, including acknowledging his feelings and his emotions. So what do you say to people on both sides of the aisle who are concerned that you are trying to protect the president?
Well, actually, the statements about his sincere beliefs are recognized in the report that there was substantial evidence for that. So I'm not sure what your basis is for saying that I'm being generous to the president.
You face an unprecedented situation. It just seems like there's a lot of effort to go out of your way to acknowledge how this.
Well, is there another precedent for it?
No, but it's unusual.
Okay, so unprecedented is an accurate description.
Yes, but
okay. This is an unprecedented situation. Well, is there another precedent for it? Well, no. Well, then it is unprecedented, right? How embarrassing for this woman. I feel sorry for her actually, I don't. I don't really ever feel all that sorry for liberals in politics, but it was absolute. I saw that and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I would sulk out of there. I'd try and hide in the corner if I were her. Just to put a fine point on it, listening to that exchange made me think of a couple of clips of audio that I could sort of meld together into that very moment, the money shot, if you will, in that exchange. So just because it's Friday and for fun, here it is.
His sincere beliefs are recognized in the report that there was substantial evidence for that. So I'm not sure what your basis is for saying that I'm being generous to the president.
You face an unprecedented situation. It just seems like there's a lot of effort to go out of your way to acknowledge how this.
Well, is there another precedent for it?
No, but it's unusual.
Okay, so unprecedented is an accurate description.
Yes, but
you dropped the bomb on me, baby.
Yeah, a little bit of the Gap Band. Oh, it's a good song. He just annihilated her. He treated her like she was Dresden. It's embarrassing. Well, you know, you're running blocker. This is an unprecedented situation. You're up there saying that the president felt angry. Well, is there precedent for this? Well, no. Well, then it is, by its very definition, unprecedented. Is it not, ma'am? Yes. Boom. There you go. Done and dunner. Of course, that annihilation and the facts it contained in the Mueller report and the conclusions of the investigation, they really were unsettling to our friends on the left. It's a sad, sad day. I don't mean to pick on Brian Williams, but I'm going to pick on Brian Williams because you expect this from Chuck Todd. You expect this from Rachel Maddow. You expect this from Don Lemon and Anderson Cooper and the laundry list of occupants of the clown car that is the liberal media establishment. But Brian Williams, for years, until he was exposed as a fraud for lying about being shot at in a helicopter in the Gulf War or lying about seeing bodies floating in New Orleans, where outside of his hotel, where there was no water whatsoever outside his hotel. We know that he's been disgraced, but up until that moment, he was the face of NBC News. He was their guy. He was making like $11 million to work 22 minutes a night reading words written for him by other people and placed in a teleprompter. He probably worked a half an hour a night, because I would imagine he got at least 8 minutes of makeup and hair. But now he's relegated because his contract, they'd have to pay him out. He had just signed a 5-year contract right after he was exposed as a complete and total fraud liar. And if they'd fired him, they would have had to pay him the entirety of his contract. They're still paying him the entirety of his contract. But they said, well, we can't have you be the face of NBC News anymore because you're caught lying about pretty big things, about your own biography. I mean, Joe Biden's the only one allowed to do that. So they relegated him to MSNBC at 11 o'clock at night. He was on during the day. It was a special day in the world of news that they even dragged out disgraced Brian Williams. But on MSNBC, disgraced is a requirement. I think he had on Jay Sekulow, who is one of President Trump's personal attorneys. He's also the head of the Center for Law and Justice, I believe it's called. And Brian is hanging on this narrative that the left had before the Mueller report came out. He's not going to let anything stand in his way. And maybe, I mean, in defense of Brian Williams, perhaps he's not quick enough on the uptake that he's able to shift on the fly. He is a teleprompter reader. But this exchange is absolutely hilarious because Brian Williams asked Jay Sekulow, where are you getting this information? Where's the attorney general getting this information about no this and no that, no collusion? And Jay does what Brian should have done, what the team that prepares Brian for air should have done, and what the voice whispering in the IFB, the earpiece that Brian Williams wears. I assume he's a lot like William Hurt in the movie Broadcast News, where if somebody's not feeding him information, he's at an absolute loss. Or he's probably more like Ron Burgundy. But in any event, listen to this exchange, because not once, but twice in this short clip does Jay Sekulow take out a giant carp from his pocket and smack Brian Williams across the face with it. A little bit of reality injected into MSNBC. Don't worry, though. MSNBC did not let it ruin the rest of their day or refer back to it ever again or even talk as though this exchange had happened.
Jay Sekulow, who is on the president's legal team. Counselor, thank you very much for joining us.
Sure.
My first question, I'm afraid, is going to verge on plain English. Where did the attorney general get off with that characterization this morning, including four mentions that there was no collusion? What document was he reading compared to the one we're left with?
Well, page 2 of the document says the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign coordinated with the Russian government in its election of interference activities, in its election interference activities. So it's right from the document itself.
Have you read part 1?
I have read part 1 and part 2.
You find good news in here for the president and the administration?
The investigation did not, page 181, the investigation did not establish that the contacts described in volume 1, that's the Russian contacts, amounted to an agreement to commit any violation of federal criminal law, including foreign influence and campaign finance laws. Yeah, I think it's a very good win.
I absolutely love that. Where were you getting this idea? Where did Bill Barr get this idea that there was no collusion? Well, from page 2, right here. Let me read it. Where did you get the idea that there's no collusion? Well, let's look at page 187, right here. Let me read it. Oh, okay. And then he immediately throws to somebody else. You've got one of the president's attorneys on the biggest story of the day, and Brian Williams immediately hands the ball off going, well, I'm at a loss. I don't know. I didn't read. I can never learn to read except the teleprompter, so I couldn't possibly be expected to know what I'm talking about. I imagine he went back to his control room during the commercial break and said, what are you guys doing? You're out there. You're screwing me over here. You're feeding me bad information, making me look like a fool. But For that to happen, he'd have to be self-aware, and the odds of him being self-aware are pretty damn slim. Poor Brian Williams. Poor Brian Williams. Over at CNN, remember I told you this yesterday, I've mentioned this several times, the outrage in the media that we've gotten for the last month about how could Bill Barr have read 400 pages plus in 48 hours and then summarize it in a four-page memo to Congress. That is an outrage. You need much longer than 48 hours to read this report. Well, it turns out that you don't, because the entire day yesterday on cable news was about the Mueller report, starting from the moment it was released. Literally the moment that it was released, analysis, people pontificating, swearing up and down that this report says this, it declares this, it proves this, there's, oh, we've got obstruction of justice, blah, blah, blah. Here's a little thing, and I get into this with Hans von Spakovsky in the interview, but the Mueller report, the media is obsessing on this one thing, that they did not exonerate the president when it comes to obstruction of justice because he tweeted things and he said to do things that weren't done and he didn't follow up on. He said them in anger. So the special counsel did not exonerate the president on obstruction of justice. Therefore, Congress has to do that. That's why Congress has to do this, because there's no exoneration. The purpose of an investigation is not exoneration. You're not supposed to prove, you don't have to prove exoneration. You either can prove something to the point that you can charge it, or you cannot. Now, the media's favorite answer to that is that, well, the Justice Department guidelines state clearly that a sitting president cannot be charged with obstruction of justice. That is why Robert Mueller did not charge the president of the United States with obstruction of justice. Well, first of all, the underlying alleged crime of collusion, colluding with a foreign power to steal the election, was completely disproven. So there is no underlying crime against which to obstruct justice. So that sort of blows a big hole in the side of that. More to the point, though, Mueller wrote his report on his own with no input from anybody from the Justice Department. If Robert Mueller felt that the president deserved to be indicted on obstruction of justice for anything he is alleged to have done, he could have written it into that report. It could have gone something like, we found evidence that the president, that we believe indicates the president of the United States deliberately acted in a malicious way to obstruct justice, but since the Justice Department guidelines forbid us from indicting the president, we therefore cannot do that, even though we would like to, and we find ample evidence to do so. Yet he did not say that. He said, I leave this up to the Attorney General. And the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, no fan of the president, concluded that it was not obstruction of justice. And Rod Rosenstein, again, he hates the president of the United States. He's been fired by the president of the United States. The president allowed him to stay on through this report. Sooner or later, he's going to leave. He has no incentive to keep his mouth shut. What is he going to do? Get fired again? Rosenstein was fired because he offered to wear a wire to secretly record the president of the United States. And I think that the president of the United States, by that point, had had enough of secretly being recorded by government officials. Well, those same people in the media who told us that Barr could not have read this report in 48 hours, are you kidding me? Again, they started opining upon it immediately. I am going to play you two clips combined from CNN. Again, this is from the Washington Free Beacon. Again, it's David Rutz. I feel like I should give David Rutz half my salary for today's show, but I don't get a salary for the show, so I will give him half my salary. He writes that less than 10 minutes after the long-awaited Robert Mueller report and the Russia investigation was released, CNN Justice Department reporters Laura Jarrett, who is Valerie Jarrett, Barack Obama's brain, it's her daughter, isn't that nice? Remember that next time you hear somebody whining about somebody from Fox News went to work for the administration. This is an outrage. The closeness of the relationship between Fox News and Donald Trump is a threat to justice. They're nothing but state-run media. CNN has Valerie Jarrett's daughter on the payroll and Evan Perez. They'd allegedly, 10 minutes after the release of the report, were billed as having read the report. 10 minutes. Now, I know some people can read fast, but 448 pages in about 10 minutes, 448 pages heavily footnoted, written by lawyers in 10 minutes? I don't think so. Although there is one person I can think of who could do this amazing feat. I don't believe that he is employed by CNN, but he could be a producer over there for all we know. Now, of whom do I speak? If you were a child in the late 80s, early 90s, I think it was, you will know the hero of whom I speak.
Who can read on the run and have lots of fun?
Speed reader, speed reader.
Who can do a handstand and read everything on the newsstand?
Speed reader, speed reader. Speed reader.
Who can run forward and back and read everything in the stack?
Speed reader, speed reader, speed reader, speed reader.
All right, looks like Speed Reader is about ready to do his eye exercises, doing push-ups with his eyelids. Up, down, left, right, left, right, left, right, left. Oh, looks like Speed Reader is about ready to read the book.
That, of course, talking about Speed Reader from the Great Space Coaster. I don't know if Great Space Coaster was national or if it was just regional, but I remember eating my Frosted Flakes and my Fruit Loops and my Kix and Trix. And Fruity Pebbles was always one of my favorites. And watching the Great Space Coaster on a TV that was, I think, 3 inches by 4 inches or something like that. I don't know. Maybe I'm just blowing smoke up my butt. When I heard the David Rutz clips from CNN, I thought of Speed Reader right away. Now let's get to the CNN clips, because again, we're talking about two reporters, Valerie Jarrett's daughter, Laura Jarrett, and Evan Perez, both Justice Department correspondents for CNN. And we're talking about 10 minutes after this report was released, 448 pages. Rutz writes, that's according to CNN anchor Jake Tapper, who led the coverage of the release of the investigation at 11:04 a.m. with the chyron flashing that the report had just been released to the public. Tapper read out the URL and how to get the report in the document. He said, quote, I want to go to Laura Jarrett for 1 second because Laura has read the report. She got it before 2 minutes ago when it was released to the public. He said that at 11:12, 8 minutes after the report was released. At 11:15, this is going to be the second part of this clip, Tapper said, quote, I want to go to Evan Perez, who has also read the report. Evan, tell us what you think of some of the big takeaways from the report are. Even if they'd gotten the report an hour earlier, which they did not, they probably got it about 10 minutes before it was posted online. There is no way, but even if given the benefit of the doubt that they'd had it for an hour, there is no way what you are about to hear come out of the mouth of Jake Tapper is true. And that means that everything that comes out of the mouths of the two reporters is also bogus, because they're playing right along. This, ladies and gentlemen, is CNN.
Is it online? You can go to www.justice.gov, and I think it's /storage/report.pdf.
Let's go to Pamela Brown.
I want to go to Laura Jarrett for 1 second, because Laura has read the report. She got it before 2 minutes ago or whenever it was released. And Laura, there's a really interesting section about Donald Trump Jr.'s interaction with WikiLeaks. It's on page 59.
U.S. presidential candidate.
I want to go to Evan Perez, who's also read the report. Evan, tell us what you think some of the big takeaways are from the report.
And who has the opinion?
Well, Jake, I think, the section on collusion, you know, is one of the things that began, obviously, the issue of collusion began this investigation.
All they had done at that point was read the table of contents. They knew that there were two volumes, one on collusion, one on obstruction, and maybe a couple of bullet points. Here's how this works, by the way, just so you know. When something this big comes out, because I've been a party to these things in the past, where there's big something coming out and you got to know. Either your boss needs you to know or it's your job that requires you to need to know. you get a 500-page piece of legislation, for example, when the Medicare Modernization Act came out, was released in Congress 2004, I think it was. I was doing health policy at the Heritage Foundation. You can't read legislation. It is god-awful terrible. We had five people, I think, and we split it up. Everybody got a chunk of it. Now, we didn't have an immediate deadline. We wanted to get through and do some analysis as quickly as possible. But reading legislation like that is impossible to do one person at a time. Reading this report inside of an hour is impossible to do. So they probably divvied up. They called all hands on deck. CNN literally had a half moon of people on set all the time. They fielded a softball team for analysis over at CNN all day long. There were no fewer than nine people on camera, I think, or eight people on camera at a time throughout the entire day. They called in every producer, executive producer, associate producer, and when the report was published, when it was made public, I bet they probably divvied it up 10 or 15 pages at a time to everybody. Here, you take this one, you take this set, you take this set, read it, highlight anything, put it in the teleprompter, put it out there, send it via text to these people, and that's how they were able to get through it so quickly. But I want to go back in the Wayback Machine because of the way that the media responded to this and the way that the media responded to the idea that Mueller could have done something similar inside of 48 hours, not 48 minutes. The New York Times had an editorial on this very subject about the outrage that the left was feeling, because, of course, the New York Times is the paper of record for the left. They're basically stenographers for the Democratic Party. On March 24th, when this report, when the Bob Barr four-page memo came out, the editorial board had an editorial entitled "No Collusion, No Exoneration." Subheadline: "A Trump-friendly Attorney General's letter doesn't do justice to the special counsel's investigation. Release the whole report." In this editorial, which is the official opinion of the newspaper, they wrote, quote, "Mr. Barr wasn't as cautious. Less than 48 hours after receiving Mr. Mueller's report, the Attorney General briskly decided that Mr. Trump had not obstructed justice. Why not? Because there was no underlying crime to obstruct. Mr. Barr said, and anyway, most of Mr. Trump's behavior took place in full public view, had no connection to any legal proceedings, and wasn't, quote, done with corrupt intent," end quote. Then the New York Times opines, quote, "How did Mr. Barr make these determinations so quickly? On what evidence in the report did he base it? How could he possibly have come to this conclusion after a mere 48 hours? There is no way humanly possible anyone could read 400 plus pages of Mueller's report in 48 hours. It was actually more than 48 hours, but again, they're not going to be bothered by reality, because the Attorney General had been briefed 3 weeks prior that the report was being written, and here's the gist of it. That was the New York Times then, that was the media then, that was, of course, parroted by Democrats across the fruited plain and by their journalist puppets in the media. Yet, 10 minutes after the report was released, two CNN reporters had read the whole thing and were ready to offer their analysis of it. Sound a little bit fishy? Sound a little bit weird? Now, it's not just CNN. MSNBC and Fox did the exact same thing. At least Fox had people that go to Catherine Herridge. She just read something interesting. And then she'd tell you what she just read. And then they say, well, I'm going to go back to reading it. Come back to me later when I find something else interesting. There was none of that. It was CNN had legal analysts on there saying, Jeffrey Toobin was out there, who's like, you know, the report says this, that, and the other thing. They'd all gotten a bullet point summary written by interns and associate producers, all probably low paid. Guarantee they're all paid a fraction of what the people who were spewing this stuff as if they'd read it are paid. And we're supposed to sit back and go, oh, that makes perfect sense. This analysis is spot on and based upon the deep analysis after a contemplative cup of coffee or tea, you're like me and you think coffee sucks. And we're supposed to accept this as truth. These are the arbiters of truth. What they really did is they got talking points from the Democratic Party and they simply moved on. They didn't care. Why? Who's going to fact? They're the fact checkers. Who's going to fact check CNN? Fewer people were watching CNN than probably listening to this podcast, so it doesn't really matter. But just keep that in mind, that almost every time there is a breaking news story, a tragedy, a moment of glory, anything that's breaking news happening at the time, you should always wait 24 hours before you start, at least 12 hours before you start believing what is being reported. Whenever there's a terrorist attack, it's like, you know, there might be two people dead and then there ends up being 25 people dead. Or, well, there's no proof of anything. We don't know. Authorities are telling us this, that, and the other thing. 90% of it ends up being garbage. It's kind of understandable in the throes of breaking news as it's happening while it's still going on, that you're just hungry for information. No journalistic outfit will ever go, we don't know anything yet, so we're going to go back to the stuff we know about, and as soon as we're able to confirm something, we'll come back to you and give you that information. Everybody in cable news knows that, well, screw it, I'll go to their competitors, who's wildly speculating. Wild speculation is paid off, and being wrong is forgiven or ignored. When it comes to a live breaking event like that, it's kind of understandable. People should take that stuff with a grain of salt. But this isn't a live breaking event where lives are in the balance, where people need to know, where people are concerned about other human beings or loved ones or landmarks or whatever is going on. This is a stagnant piece of paper, lots of pieces of paper. If you took an hour and said, you know what, we have staff reading it, and they're going to give us the information once they have a chance to actually consume this, that would be understandable. That would be responsible. But that's not what journalism is. Journalism is, here's a sentence somebody found. We take it completely out of context, and I guarantee you everybody on television yesterday who was quoting these sentences pulled out had not read the preceding sentence or the following sentence, paragraphs before or after, or had any context whatsoever. They were just basing their quote-unquote analysis on what somebody was feeding them from a control room somewhere. Well, they said this in the report. And then they just went off on a tangent. I shudder to think about how misinformed people were yesterday. I can take comfort in the fact that MSNBC and CNN had lost so much of their audience recently that there are fewer Americans watching that. But there are still Americans watching that. There are still Americans posting on their Facebook pages this aha moment. What is in the report, in the minutia of the report, is important. But what is more important than any individual nugget inside that report are the conclusions about that report by the special counsel and by the attorney general, since he is the ultimate arbiter of it. On collusion, unambiguously, zero evidence, no collusion happened. On the obstruction of justice, the attorney general, zero evidence, no obstruction of justice, or no obstruction of justice, not zero evidence. The special counsel said, there could be things that could go either way. We're not going to make that call. We leave that up to you. Remember that as you go through the weekend. It's Easter weekend, so hopefully people will have better things to do than really sit around and ponder the report by Robert Mueller and the media analysis of it. But if you happen to be exposed to it, think of it as radiation. It gets on somebody, and then it gets on somebody else. It spreads like a cold on a plane. Yesterday, the mainstream liberal media was lying, was making stuff up, was basing so-called analysis on a small snippet of what's going on, of what was out there, because they were in a rush to be first. And being right is the only thing that gets sacrificed when you're in a rush to be first. It used to be the opposite. The world was such a better informed place when there wasn't a 24-hour news cycle. Lastly, before we get to the interview, I want to just take a note because the narrative is about to change again. It is now going to become, well, Congress has to act. Democrats are already pushing this. We need to make sure we might have to impeach the president because there's ample evidence of obstruction of justice, even though that is explicitly not what the report says. It says that they didn't have enough evidence to charge the president. They didn't have enough evidence to clear him, which isn't their job, but they didn't have enough evidence to charge him. Now they're going to say this is a political point, and Adam Schiff for brains, Adam Schiffhead, and Jerry Nadler, Jobba Nadler, they are out there saying we need to get more, we need Mueller to testify, we need to get him out there, we've got to know, we've got to look into this, this is too important. Yet you've got Nancy Pelosi saying that Donald Trump isn't worth impeaching, and you've got Steny Hoyer who has come out and said that this is not, the president is not, it's not worthwhile. It's not worthwhile to impeach the president of the United States. CNN talked to him. The CNN reports his House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer told CNN Thursday that it would not be worthwhile for House Democrats to pursue impeachment in the aftermath of the release of the redacted version of the special counsel report. Quote, this is Steny Hoyer, based on what we have seen to date, going forward on impeachment is not worthwhile at this point. Very frankly, there is an election in 18 months, and the American people will make a judgment. End quote. Steny Hoyer. This, of course, got the left wing very, very upset. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez announced that she was signing on to articles of impeachment because it was her duty. I don't think she really understands the meaning of that word. I think she was literally believing she was talking about her poop, but that's just me. But I want you to pay close attention to what the leadership in the Democratic Party is pushing here, with Hoyer saying it's not worthwhile and Nancy Pelosi saying that it's not worth it, that Donald Trump is not worth going through impeachment. The real reason that impeachment can't happen, isn't going to happen, is there are no grounds for impeachment, and the Mueller report solidified that fact yesterday. The media knows this, the Democrats know this, but they can't just throw their hands up and go, oh, well, we looked into it, and it turns out that he wasn't Vladimir Putin's tool, so there we can't impeach him because he didn't do anything. They need to keep their base placated. They need to keep their base angry. So, yes, some of their base is being angered by saying it's not worthwhile or he's not worth the effort. But they can't actually go forward. Implicit in he's not, it's not worthwhile and he's not worth the effort is, oh, he deserves it. Oh, he absolutely deserves it. But we're not going to, for the good of the country, we're not going to do it. Lost in that is the truth, which Democrats are not bound by, that there are actually no grounds for impeachment. And that is what the report found. Journalists should give that context, but they won't, they don't care. They have a master to serve, and that master has a D after their name. So keep that in mind as you, if you happen to lose a bet and have to watch a Sunday show this weekend, there will be all sorts of talk of impeachment, and there will be talk of, well, Hoyer and Pelosi say it's not really worth it. Is it worth impeaching the president? And that will be the question probably for the roundtable segment and for whatever Democrats they have on their shows. They really won't focus on the fact that there aren't any grounds for impeachment, which is kind of important. It serves the purpose of placating the radical base, that they're still looking into this, they're still working for it, and it serves the narrative that the media can keep feeding, that this is, this sword of Damocles is still hovering over Donald Trump's head, because he could be impeached at any time because he's obstructed justice, and that's just how it is, and it's a matter of whether or not there is a will to go forward on behalf of House Democrats. No, there's no evidence, but they need the narrative so they'll keep breathing life into this. It's a great big fat lie, ladies and gentlemen. I wish there were more time. There's so much more to get to. We did have some response from Schiffhead, but you got the gist of it. He's not going to be bothered by reality, nor is he going to be questioned by any real journalists. We also had Maggie Haberman of the New York Times outraged that the Marine band that was playing at the Wounded Warrior event with the president, that they played a song about Germany, or from Sound of Music, saying, implying that it was some sort of Nazi song. Of course, the point of the Sound of Music is anti-Nazis. The Von Trapp family were escaping the Nazis. And the music, by the way, that Maggie Haberman was saying, can you believe that they're playing this? Do you think they know the context? Was, of course, written in 1951 for Sound of Music. And for those of you playing the home game, that's a little ways after 1945 when World War II ended. But she'll face no consequences for her stupidity, for her bias. She'll get a reward. She'll probably win a Pulitzer sooner or later if she hasn't already. Now here is the interview with Hans von Spakovsky, somebody who knows about the report, who understands the law, unlike all the buffoons we've heard audio clips of before. Anyway, thank you for listening. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. I want to say a big shout-out thank you to Shu. Shu knows who he is. He sent me a beautiful cutting board. I got an email that says, hey, I want to send you a gift. He sent me this beautiful handmade cutting board, bunch of pieces of wood. It's like a checkerboard kind of thing, but it's dark. It's gorgeous, and it's heavy. It's solid. So thank you, Shu. Thank you all for listening. Please tell a friend. Please keep spreading the word. Turn them on to this show. I think this show didn't suck. So spread the word over the weekend. Happy Easter. Eat lots of ham and be back here on Monday. All right. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the video edition of the Daily Caller podcast. Every Friday, we sit down and chat with somebody significantly more knowledgeable than we are on the issues of the day, and it has never been more true than it is today. We're covering the issue of the day and with somebody who is significantly more learned than we are. Our guest is Hans von Spakovsky. He is Senior Legal Fellow in the Mies Center over at the Heritage Foundation. How are you today, Vons?
Derek, very, very good. I've been putting my speed reading experiences to work today, trying to get through the 450-page Mueller report.
That's really funny because we were told that it was impossible just a month ago for the attorney general and a team of lawyers to read and digest and summarize a 400-page report. And now everybody in the media has read it in about 20 minutes and is speaking about right. It authoritatively. But you, as a lawyer, and you, somebody who specializes in election law and has written several books on election law, you've read this with insider knowledge that most people don't have. And that's why I wanted to talk to you today. As you have perused this report, have read it, and still sort of digesting it, is there anything, knowing what we've known in the past 2 years, everything that's been reported, especially in the past month, is there anything that sticks out in your head as sort of a shocking revelation in the Mueller report?
No, not really. It's divided into two pieces, volume one, volume two. Volume one is all about the Russian election collusion claim against the Trump administration. And as you skim through it, it's pretty clear that when Attorney General William Barr sent his letter 2 weeks ago to Congress saying that the special counsel had concluded there was no evidence of any collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians, that he was 100% accurate in summarizing the findings of Mueller. And the report doesn't in any way dispute that. The second half of the report, as you know, volume two, has to do with the claim of possible obstruction of justice, in particular because the president fired James Comey. And again, there, you know, the attorney general, Barr left it. He didn't make a legal conclusion. He just laid out the evidence on that and left it up to General Barr to come to a conclusion. And Barr told Congress also 2 weeks ago that there really wasn't any evidence to sustain an obstruction of justice charge. And again, reading through it, I think that's correct. Anybody reading the report is going to see that from the internal conversations and meetings at the White House that the president was awfully angry and frustrated over this investigation. That actually helps his case. Why? Because it's very clear that the actions he was taking was because he felt he was innocent and he was being falsely accused. That's one of the reasons he wanted Bob Mueller fired, even though no action was actually taken to do it. Why is that significant? Because, look, if you want to prove obstruction of justice, you normally have to show a corrupt motive, a corrupt intent. And clearly a corrupt intent would be if you're trying to stop an investigation to cover up an actual crime. Here, there was no actual crime. And what was driving the president was anger over being accused of something he didn't do. The final word on that, however, is remember, as frustrated as the president was, no actions were actually taken of any kind that in any way limited, restricted, or otherwise inhibited Mueller from being able to do his investigation, to speak to the 500 witnesses that Mueller interviewed. So there wasn't anything actually done in any way that obstructed the investigation.
One of the things, and to that point, one of the things that I've heard a lot since the report was released from the liberal media was about how Mueller did not exonerate the president on the issue of obstruction of justice. That's not the job, of course, of an investigation to exonerate anybody, but they're making that point and hammering it and saying that they couldn't prove obstruction, but they also did not exonerate the president. If Mueller had actually found evidence that would lead a reasonable prosecutor to conclude that there was either an attempt to obstruct justice or actual obstruction of justice, even with the Department of Justice guidelines that say a sitting president cannot be indicted, that would not have stopped Robert Mueller from including in the report that the president, we found ample evidence that we believe would secure a conviction of obstruction of justice, but we're unable to indict the president this time, correct? So it's not, I just want to be clear, because that seems to be the talking point of the left, that Mueller secretly thinks this, but didn't put it in the report. But there would be nothing stopping him from saying that.
No. It's very clear when you read this entire report that Bob Mueller obviously didn't feel any inhibitions about saying what they believed had happened. And if, in fact, he had sufficient evidence to believe that the president had obstructed justice, yeah, I have no doubt he would have said so. He still might have left. He still probably would have left it up to General Barr as to what to do about it, because of the fact that it is Justice Department policy that a sitting president cannot be criminally charged or otherwise indicted. But I think you are absolutely right. He would have said there was sufficient evidence, in my legal opinion, to lead to an obstruction of justice charge, but then he would have left it up to Barr to make a decision. That did not happen.
On the matter of Volume 1, Russian collusion, as we've been told time and time again in the past 2.5 years, there was this simpatico relationship. Vladimir Putin clearly had something over Donald Trump. There were all sorts of weird, unexplained contacts and connections between the Trump campaign and Russian government officials. Any of that even come close to panning out? Because we've been told that there is evidence of collusion in plain sight by members of Congress who sit on intelligence committees who presumably would have access to such information. Is there any reason to believe that any of that was anything more than wishful thinking and, frankly, flat out lying?
No. I mean, look, there were some contacts between the campaign and some Russians, but the report makes it clear that the Russian government was not able to get anyone in the Trump campaign to assist them or somehow coordinate with them. You know, there were some contacts, for example, you know, someone, a Russian claimed, oh, well, I've got opposition research on bad stuff on Hillary Clinton, and we should have a meeting. And they did have a meeting. We've all known about that for a while. But then there was nothing to actually discuss there, except for adoption rules and a law, the Magnitsky Law, in place between Russia and the U.S. So nothing actually happened with that. There was never any coordination or conspiracy of any kind in which anyone in the Trump campaign or any other Americans participated in what the Russians were doing, which was, as you know, the main thing was hacking into the DNC computer and the Hillary Clinton campaign. That was all an operation that the Russian government carried out without any help or assistance from any Americans.
One of the conclusions in the collusion part of the report is that there was ample opportunity for the Trump campaign and Trump surrogates and Trump tangentially related people to have worked with the Russians.
Oh, sure.
If they had so chosen, the Russians had reached out several times to try to infiltrate. I imagine how they try to infiltrate everything. Why do you think, in your opinion, Hans, as somebody who knows election law, knows the law, Is it normal for the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the intelligence community in general to be aware of these, as they apparently were at the time, and not give a heads up to anybody in the campaign and say, hey, this person who's kind of sniffing around the edges and trying to reach out to peripheral players in your world have some unseemly ties and you might want to watch them or distance yourself from these people? Is it normal for the FBI to just, it seemed like they were sitting back. They saw somebody put by a ski mask and a gun and write a note and then drive to a bank, and the police just kind of followed them and almost waiting for them, hoping for them to rob the bank. In my mind, is it normal for the FBI to act that way and let this sort of unfold?
No, I don't think it was normal at all. In fact, I think the very proper procedure would have been for them to immediately contact the campaign and warn them off of some of the individuals who were contacting them and talking to them. I can't understand why they didn't do that. And that's something that they're going to have to explain when the attorney general does what he has said he's going to do, which is launch an investigation of the opening up of this counterintelligence operation against the Trump campaign.
There really isn't much in this report about the genesis of the investigation. There's casual mention of George Papadopoulos, things like that, but they don't really get into that. Going forward, though, of course, what's in the Mueller report is important, but largely irrelevant to politics and apparently journalism, as we're seeing in the last 2 days. Do you see any openings, especially since the collusion aspect, Volume 1, seems to have put that to bed pretty thoroughly? Mueller was kind of unambiguous, but he seems to have left the window cracked to open in Volume 2 when it comes to obstruction of justice. Do you see, can you read the tea leaves and see what you suspect Democrats will try to seize on? Because they have too much invested politically in this narrative that Donald Trump is corrupt to let it go, and there's going to be continued investigations, and there's still talk of impeachment. Do you see an opening for any of that?
No, I think you're right. I think they are going to continue to push it, but I don't think they're really going to get anywhere. And I think they are acting dangerously politically. You know, the American people are going to see this. They're going to see that there was a 2-year investigation conducted. It spent a lot of money. There was no finding of illegal behavior. And if the Democrats now keep pushing that idea, they're going to have a hard time making anybody believe that it's not just a partisan witch hunt being done for partisan political purposes. And when you add on top of that, them trying to get the president's tax returns when there's no allegations of any kind that he engaged in any kind of illegal behavior with his tax returns, that's just going to add to that belief or that view, that public view, that they're just engaging in partisan witch hunting. And the Americans, they don't like that. They don't want to see law enforcement used for corrupt purposes. And I don't think they want to see Congress using its investigative powers for those kind of corrupt purposes either.
I have to play devil's advocate here for a second, Hans, because
sure.
I know that there are a lot of people wondering, because they are hearing the other side. They're watching CNN or MSNBC, if only because they're trapped at an airport. And they are hearing that there is all sorts of bad news in here for the president of the United States. As somebody who's a conservative but knows the law, is there not obviously not illegal because no charges are pending and no charges seem to have been pending, but what would you say is the part that looks the worst for the White House?
Well, I think probably, look, there's a lot of reports about internal meetings and internal conversations at the White House where the president's really angry and he's telling his aides he wants them to do certain things, and the aides basically tamp him down and calm him down and say, really, you know, we can't do that. And they don't end up doing it. And, you know, I can see folks perhaps looking at that and thinking that doesn't reflect well on the president. But I think a lot of folks look at despite how the president sometimes acts and sometimes the things he says on Twitter, they see what he accomplishes. And anybody looking at the last 2 years with an economy that's booming like crazy, unemployment at such a low rate, and all kinds of positive things like that, I think for ordinary Americans, especially those getting a tax refund they wouldn't have gotten before the big tax cut, I think they're just going to look at what's going on in Washington as a lot of white noise.
Yeah, it really seems like, obviously, the president was a political novice when he assumed office. And of course, there is a massive difference between what he says and tweets and what he actually does and what he implements. And tweeting is not policy. It's not regulation. It's not law. Last question for you, Hans. Bottom line this for us. We've spent 2 years sort of hampering the Trump administration. Democrats weren't going to work with him, not that they would have anyway. But a lot of Republicans kept their distance just in case, out of nerves and unsureness about the president of the United States. There's a lot that has been lost, but we spent $25 million on this and it's become a media obsession. What's the ultimate takeaway at the end of that yellow brick road?
Well, the ultimate takeaway is that the Democratic attempt to overturn the 2016 election has failed. And they have not gotten what they wanted, which was an ability to take down the president and find what they would consider to be sufficient to get him impeached. That didn't happen. He's going to be president for another 2 years. And if he runs for re-election, I think they're going to have some pretty stiff competition from him.
It's going to be fun to watch. Everybody's going to be spinning for the next week. Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
There you have it. That's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for this week. It's Good Friday. It's Easter on Sunday. Eat lots of ham and be back here on Monday.
Who can do a handstand and read everything? I'm going to stand. Speed